Good evening.
Good evening. I was drinking my tea.
Through you. Welcome, everybody. We're going to we haven't met for a while, and so it's always nice to sit down and have a chat with Jenna. I was thinking how I was really properly looking forward to this. Just thought I'd tell you.
Oh,
I
thank you.
was. It's really nice to kind of like think. I do this. Look. Ah. That. I don't really get to talk about things in depth much. I don't really in my life, actually, in the busy, busying around. And so we decided, didn't we, to talk tonight about sleep.
Yeah.
And, it made me go a bit, oh, because I was like, it feels still in my, my children are 20 plus. It still sends a shudder in my tummy of like, oh, that big subject of, of baby sleep, infant sleep, toddler sleep, we and but even more reason because on my recent postnatal visits to people, I've been noticing it remains the same controversial thing it was for me 20 years ago. And now, and that is like, wow, really? Well, we've learned nothing. So we thought we'd have an exploration, and we don't know it as usual where we're going with it, do we? But the good news is you are still in it, aren't you? You describe, your current situation, and I'm, as I just used this word just now, that I'm out of date is what I'm going to, declare on this podcast. I am out of date. My children are grown and gone. I look after babies, it's true, in my work, but I would say I don't have a sort of living feel for being super knackered, and let that be a kind of message to everyone out there who's exhausted that I can re I'll start with this, that I remember the day that I turned over, having gone to sleep the night before, woken up in the following day, and I said to my husband, "Oh yes, I forgot. You go to bed in one day and then you wake up in another day."
Oh, I don't remember
Ridiculous, isn't that ridiculous? And I'm sorry to say this because it's going to really pain you, but of course I've had that for many years now, and it's it's quite something. And then unfortunately menopause comes and then you wake up for different reasons, but actually, yeah, it's like it's hard, isn't it? Newborn arrives, baby arrives, very little, I think, preparation is done about it, very little discussion is had between couples first time. You say where you are at the moment.
Well, I just, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because sleep is quite a controversial topic and it's so emotive. And I think it's emotive because everyone struggles without sleep. Like, whoever you are, even if you can kind of be fairly flexible and adjust to it, it's still hard and it's a physical impact, isn't it? Which then can lead to a bit of an emotional or a big emotional impact as well. I mean, Jude is particularly bad. And I don't want to say bad, like good and bad. Even when I describe him, I would say, like, oh, he doesn't sleep. Of course, he does sleep. He sleeps loads. He sleeps hours and hours, but he just wakes really, really frequently. And actually, the other day, I had to refresh myself and I went to, I really love Sarah Rockwell Smith and her books. And I got out, she's got a lovely book called The, is it the gentle sleep method? I don't want to get that wrong. I think it's called the gentle sleep method. And I thought I need a refresher because I did start to question myself. And because I'm, I like to be responsive. And years ago, I wrote a blog on this and I called it, Hi, my name's Jenna and I'm a nighttime parent, like a confession, because it's almost like you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to respond at night, past a certain age. I don't know. There's so many like judgments, I think, not intentionally, but everyone has what they think about sleep. It does seem to be quite a divided camp. But yeah, and I had to pick up a book. So I was like, I need a bit of help here because I'm struggling right now. I mean, it's many, many, many times a night.
Can you tell me how literally how it happened? So you'll go to sleep. He's next to you. He's next to you.
Well, no, Jude's been a bit more of a cot baby, probably because of his low tone and stuff. I've been a bit, we've
He's
been
a
a bit
cop.
more careful around co-sleeping. We've done loads of co-sleeping, but he he likes his space and his firm mattress and stuff. So he, and he'll even when we're co-sleeping, he'll go and then make me put him back in his cot because he wants to like stretch out and stuff.
And how will he wait then? He'll just make
he'll
a
just wake always after he'll do the evening for sometimes 5 hours if I'm lucky, but that's usually when I'm going to bed. And then it's probably every hour till morning, pretty much. Sometimes it
Can we
feels
just pause? Can we just pause, Jenna? You wake every
long.
hour.
I reckon, and sometimes definitely more. I don't know because I won't look at the clock. That is my one tip for anyone who's going through this. Do not punish yourself by thinking, knowing exactly how many times you've been woken up and for how long, because that just destroys you. I never look at the clock. So I think sometimes he might do 2 or 3 hours, but then he wakes like every 10 minutes or something. Because some mornings I wake up and I'm like, did I go to sleep? And he's not like awake for long periods. He is just moaning, restless, rolling around, boobing, not boobing, falling asleep, waking up. And it's kind of, I do remember this with my other two though. And I do feel like it is a stage of toddler sleep when they're really developing and they've just got such busy little brains and they can't quite settle. But I know that some toddlers, you know, happily sleep through. So, and that, you know, you do start questioning yourself. Maybe that's part of it, isn't it? The sleep debate is you do start questioning yourself as
Yeah,
a
I
parent.
remember, that's what I remember. But let's just sit this on. I've said this in various podcasts. The writer of What Mothers Do, Naomi Stadlen, was on Radio 4 Woman's Hour many, 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 many years ago with Super Nanny, who's now long gone. But Super Nanny was on Woman's Hour telling people that they shouldn't have babies giving them the runaround or toddlers giving them the runaround. And in that kind of slightly autocratic, no, sort this out. It, like you're saying, like, you should be doubting yourself because it's not right, you know, that kind of doing it. And they had them on there to be controversially opposed. And of course, as she's a psychotherapist, Naomi Stadlen was not having any of it and just was very quiet and contemplative. And they said, and what do you think then? And she was the sign-off on the program. What do you think about, you know, mothers and sleep and, you know, babies and given what Super Nanny says about routines? And she went really, really quiet. And uncannily, you know, like a really long pause for radio, which was even better because it was, she wasn't doing it because she was stuck for words. She was doing it because she's a psychotherapist. So it just didn't, it wasn't radio friendly. So let me show you how long. Well, I think that if we all just thought more about how generous mothers were rather than condemning them for being tired, then that would be a better place to start. And everybody was silent. And she said, they give the sleep from their eyes in that Arabic phrase. You know, they, you literally are giving care and love and comfort at your cost, at your huge cost. And it was so rare to hear anybody say it
I
from that
love
perspective.
that. That's really
She said,
beautiful.
why don't we honour the generosity of mothers all over the country who are doing this day and night? And no comment, nobody talks about it. And even turning up at work, aren't they? And they're carrying on with other children and they're still functioning in the day and they're driving cars and cleaning up and making dinner. And no one says anything. You know, it's just like sort it out, you know. But actually, what about like deep bow and the, you know, tip your hat and like here's a golden trophy? And I don't mean that we wouldn't do it because one is in service to one's child, but you can't say it to yourself and people don't say it to you. So I always thought, oh, that's so lovely that she said that. I mean, I remember it felt quite tearful at the time because I was still in it. That's amazing what you're doing for him because you are integrating him. You know, he, as you say, he's not doing that to be naughty. He's doing that because he's discharging his day, isn't he, in some way, into the mattress. He doesn't quite know what to do with whatever physically energy is coming out of his fingertips. And so he squeaks and squawks, you know, they go, you know, and tinies do squeaky, but he's probably doing little you know, and that thing and they're turning round and, you know, you're his regulator, you know.
But it's so hard, isn't it? Because you do, you know, it's a lot. And I really appreciate that generosity comment because it's nice to be, that comment makes you feel seen, you know, seen doing something that is just natural and part, like you say, it's part of it all, but it's bloody hard and it's really hard work, whether it's, you know, you've just had a baby and you're fresh with a newborn, Or, they're 4 or 5 years old and they're having bad dreams and they're waking you up every night, or they're wetting the bed, or, I don't think it ever ends. None of my kids really, truly, truly, truly slept through. I mean, no wakes for like weeks and weeks on end. Both of mine, till they're about eight.
No, I was the same. I was the
Like,
same. Yeah.
and I don't think we talk about that enough. People talk about, oh, this newborn's going to keep you up. Maybe they talk about the first year. And then past that, I think the toddler mum who's been at it for a couple of years is way more knackered than the newborn mum in some respects.
Yes.
What I mean? Because it's just built that it's built on her. And, there are, I mean, I am getting a few physical effects now, like proper ones, like my skin is shot and stuff. But, and I know that that is a bit of a warning sign, and I want to sort of, I do want to attempt a bit of a, I don't even know at the moment. There's not a solution as such, but there's probably little things I could do to make it a bit better,
I can hear in your voice that I can so remember that feeling, as you just said, the doubt thing. And if we were to really dive into that doubt, it's that feeling if you wake up and you're mussy headed and you're fuzzy everything, and you have this kind of nagging, oh, should I be sorting that out? Will it ever resolve? Am I right to carry on? And then you swing into, then you get a bit more perky by mid morning after a coffee, and then you're like, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And then you swing back again, and then and it just goes round and round in this state of uncertainty. But actually, one of the things I remember learning most about having children was the shock of how valuable uncertainty was, because it kept me flexible and it kept me not nailing everything down. And it's actually the absolute cornerstone of flexible of mothering, is to be in a perpetual relationship with that particular day. You know, there's nothing worse than being tied up with a bow in parenting terms, that everything's nailed down and that's it. I think children are needing to, they're a constantly moving project, aren't they? They're personal development. They're just all the time.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Like, he's a human being, and I know that I have off days, on days, great days, low days, fun days, crap days. Like, and he's having all that as well. So I kind of feel like, to be fair, his sleep is consistently quite shocking. But I mean, do you know what I mean? I wouldn't expect his sleep to be consistent through his life, because he's not
Oh,
going
yeah.
to have, consistent days, consistent emotions, consistent development. It's kind of, there is a lot of pressure, isn't there, to have a sleeper. And I think that's generally, though, because I was doing some reading up about it in adult sleep, and that has all become a bit of a commodity, like
Yeah.
making adults sleep. And it's become a whole, business enterprise, and everyone's kind of cashing in. It's almost like they value sleep as so important, so they can make us consumers of it and the products and everything.
Yes, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
So we're kind of getting tricked a bit that actually, yes, babies sleep like babies, not like adults. And yes, it will be okay. And yes, you're not doing anything wrong. And, all this stuff. But if we were feeling that way, then we wouldn't buy that gadget, and we wouldn't buy that spray, and we wouldn't buy that
No,
pillowcase.
yeah. If anybody with who's a first-time mum listening to this and who's still pregnant, probably worth us thinking about what might be good to know before the baby arrives that possibly doesn't get considered and thought through. I now send to all my mothers that I work with, I send what to expect in the first fortnight, just to kind of, because rather than announcing it like a big headline, like sleep, it doesn't make sense. And so I just sort of think, oh, here's what you can expect in the first, days, just to sort of open the subject, because it's like that's the place to start, isn't it? The lack of readiness. And I think that is common to us all. I mean, even if night nannies seem to be on the return, so there's that thing. I mean, that's obviously a very wealthy, privileged situation to be in, but they seem to be definitely on the rise in London again. I don't know what that's about. And I would say the whole side cot thing, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a cot by your bed. But I wanted to just to look at actual the physiology of sleep and newborn. So, shall I say what happened to me
Yeah,
with constant?
definitely.
So I was completely ignorant. I'm sure you know a bit about this, but I literally thought, and let's give you the dates, 2000, 2001. So I was pregnant the whole of 2001. And so, yes, I would not, I think I can categorically say, have had a single thought about it. I mean, I don't know, maybe I was rare, but I was very focused on, quite focused on the birth, pregnancy, all a bit new, quite old. Didn't, I just didn't, I had a little nursery, I had a cot, bought a cot, thought that you had a cot. And I was basically getting ready to play with dollies, I think. I didn't understand anything that this was a very, very individual arriving. I had in my mind a baby. And so the combination of not having thought about it too much and not being that evolved as a person in this, I wasn't really thinking through things very clearly. I was working till quite late. So I remember this very sort of polished nursery. Imagine me with a nursery. Isn't that hilarious? Like literally, like, not quite murals up the wall, but definitely like arranging my baby stuff in this nursery. So she arrives and she comes home the first night. We didn't even know where to put her. That's the other thing. I remember thinking, what? Know where you put them, really, because I didn't even know at that point that you just hold them all the time. So I sort of had her in this bounce, not bouncer, like a chair, I suppose, or in the, I don't know. And he said, what do we do now? First night home. And I honestly think that's something that's not discussed. It's like, maybe it's just me being mad, but I quite literally remember thinking, oh, you've come to live with us and you've got to come into our bedroom and you're going to go to sleep. But how? It was like, how do we just say good night? I mean, I was that ridiculous. I was totally ignorant, right? And I said to him, I guess I think I feed her. I'm imagining there's still a night, a bedtime. That's what I mean. I'm imagining there's an end of day. I'm imagining it's like, oh, well, let's call it the end of the day, right? Hilarious, right? So I go, let's have an end of day. Feed her, she'll fall asleep, and I put her in the cot. Which was beside our bed. And then, of course, not surprisingly, she was really heavy. I was in unsuccessfully feeding, but not realizing. She's fallen asleep just to be close to me, obviously. So she's probably not fallen, she's not fallen asleep because she's satisfied. She's fallen asleep just because she's warm and cozy and against me. But I haven't worked that out. I'm just thinking, oh, that's a feed done, So I just tuck her in within quite literally 5 seconds, because she was a real crier. She just exploded like a nuclear bomb. I mean, she literally went, wah! Like literally crazy. So I was like, oh, okay. So pick her up. And then we did that all night long till I was completely mashed up nipples. I didn't get it. I was thought you had to be upright for feeding. I mean, that's one thing we need to talk about, is like side feeding has, if you want to have a sustainable feeding sleeping arrangement, you're going to need to learn to feed on your side. So get that discussed and looked into while pregnant. Even anything you can do to start considering how that's done from a friend, and then your breastfeeding consultant or your doula, your pet or family friend. So I didn't even know about you just took them in with you. I didn't know anything. I mean, it was 2001. So then I was upright on a sofa all night long, like falling asleep into her, and then thinking, okay, this is just for tonight. This is just for tonight. We'll work it out tomorrow. And then, of course, as the week went on, I just didn't understand the main thing, which is, of course, she wanted to be with me. I mean, that's how it was done, but I just didn't get it. I just thought, oh, why isn't she sleeping? I just didn't understand that the separation was an absolute shock for her. And and then I, of course, would have done what all now is common practice. Bear in mind, fourth trimester concepts had just come out. But of course, there was already understanding through Klaus and Kennel and John Bowlby, going right back to psychology stuff. It didn't take much to look into it to find out that an infant human needs to be attached to you. But I didn't, it just wasn't out there, So I was like, started reading up, and famously, and this is in my book, and probably my friend had given me three in the bed, and I just, for some reason, just never read it. I just wouldn't, I don't know why. I was like, oh God, I can't be bothered to read a book. I've just had a baby. And then I left that for 6 weeks of crazy level uprightness, crying, cots, Moses basket, cot, Moses basket. I didn't know about slings. I didn't know about co-sleeping. I didn't know about anything. I just kept trying to force her in a pram, even a pram going driving around the block. I mean, everything to try, and she just wouldn't sleep. And then I had a kind of person who doesn't understand a new language. I just hadn't pieced together the most obvious clue, which is that she would fall asleep when she was on me. No, I mean, I know this sounds mad, but it
I
was
think a lot of people go through that. I think loads of people go through that.
really.
Yeah. Like not, taking a while to figure out that, oh, I just need to give in to this. I just need, to her to be on me. Do you
But
want
I didn't even understand the need. I didn't even understand the obvious logic that she'd come out. She's never experienced weight, lack of containment, light, noise, all those things we now know as normal, that the baby is had Deliveroo in there, and they've been continuously. I was thinking this. I would like to reflect on this. I was thinking about when a child is born, it's their first experience of scarcity, because they've never ever, they've been in a state of total replete. And I was thinking replete and complete. There's nothing they've wanted for 9 months, nothing. And imagine being in life now as a human, as a grown person, where there was, you woke up and there was nothing. There was, I mean, I wonder what that feels like. I wonder what it feels like to want for nothing. Yeah, I know that we're happy, but what I'm saying is, no, even no experience of hunger, no experience of thirst, no experience of cold, no experience of anything uncomfortable. And so, as I started to dawn on me that she was really just shocked by the onslaught of impressions that she couldn't filter, I was required to be base camp. And then as that started to dawn on me, I grew in, I was like absolutely amazed and honored and excited by it. And once I moved into it, I was like, yes, of course. But it took three in the bed of Deborah, lovely, lovely Jackson. I finally read it probably 6 to 7 weeks, and I was started crying actually. It was so overwhelmingly confirming. And Danny said, what's that? What's the matter? And I went, I just want to do this. I just want to sleep with her. And then she was never out, and that was it. And then when Pearl came, Pearl was a more of an independent sleep, but instantly you could tell she was. And that's something that we need to reflect on, is that every child's different. But by then I was so convinced of the psychology, the neurological benefits of just having them close, and I still feel like that. I don't care if a baby is independent. I mean, I understand your situation because that's physiological. But if a child was pushing away from me, actually Walter was a bit more separate. But Pearl wanted to be snuzzled up. What I mean is, she wouldn't have cried if I put her in another room even, but she did like also to be close. So I think it's like, follow the baby, isn't it? Just follow the baby and feel what feels right. So I didn't even bother. I just by then got rid of the cot and we just carried on.
I just love the way you capture something so beautifully. You always do this. You always have the like exact kind of words from the most beautiful perspective. Like when you were saying about a baby in replete and then, scarcity. And that really gets you. Do you know what I mean? It really makes you understand how that baby feels. Do you know what I mean? Like we always talk about getting behind the baby's eyes. And I think that's so key here with sleep, isn't it? Because obviously we are feeling strung out and tired and emotional and exhausted, and we've got our own hormones going on, especially if it's a newborn sleep. But that baby that had everything, everything inside, and then they've got literally they have to fight and cry for everything. Like
No.
unless they are just stuck to you like little Velcro, and you just suck them up for a few weeks.
No, exactly. And also, it's not even just that what they were familiar with is what they need, but it's also that it's what is now going to promote their development. So
Yeah.
it's like actually they're using you to, so they don't have to worry about kind of the boring basics, so that they then can get on and be themselves. And that's why I felt this honor, because I suddenly realized, oh, you need me to rest on so that you can then become you. And that's, so it's a great honor, and that is of course leading to what you were just saying about it goes right into toddler time, because of course, like Jude, he needs, I mean, he's tiny,
Yeah.
if you think of a lifetime, it's like he's such a little boy. And so, it's all reasonable and appropriate. I know we have to suffer it a bit, but then suffer a bit for that. But it's like, gosh,
It's
and
also, it's so vital, like you said, not just to development, isn't it? Like it is so important for development, but it's also that emotional Attachment, bonding, the responsiveness of a parent who goes to a child at night says to that child, you know, you're safe. I'm here. You don't have to worry about anything. I've got you. You know, whatever is going on in their world, they're not waking for no reason. You know, I think that's a bit of a misunderstanding as well. If a baby is waking, there's definitely a reason. It could be something we'll never know. You know, it's a tooth, it's a tummy ache, it's a bit of wind trapped. They're too cold, they're too hot. Something is wrong, or, you know, happening, or they're busy with development or whatever it is. But I mean, they're not just waking to piss you off. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so they need you to then meet whatever need it is, and we can't always meet it, right? Because we don't always know what it is, but we soothe and we hug and we feed and we whatever, nappy change. Or I really believe that, like, the whole nighttime parenting is a huge part of, I don't know, it's just a massive part of who they are and their development. I mean, all my kids, you know, I was a big co-sleeper with my first two. Because I was luckily given, and I know I've mentioned this before in another podcast, but I was given the continuum concept by a friend who I adore. She's like one of the best mums. I adore her. She's got five beautiful girls, and she's very cool. And she's really attachment parenting, homeschooling. She's just cool freaking chick. And I really respect her as a mum. And she gave me the continuum concept when I was pregnant with Ed. And I don't think I even finished it. I have this habit of I don't finish books, but I always read till I'm satisfied. I've got quite a lot out of it. You know, I don't always have time to
I'm the
finish
same,
them.
actually. Yeah.
But I got the bits I needed. And in the continuum concept, she writes about a baby being left to cry from the baby's perspective. And, you know, that really, it really gets you. And it's a lot about attachment in there. And she talks about this tribe that they basically live in like treetops. But there's no, you know, there's no walls, there's no sides to they live in like platforms and trees.
Wow.
And of course the babies just learn. Crawling babies learn their edges, if you know what I mean. They're not watching these babies all day long. And it was a real, you know, kind of survival instinct observation of children and how powerful their innate instincts are, you know, and that they will learn their boundaries and it was all this kind of stuff. But also, they believe that you hold the baby till they crawl away from you. That's kind of the belief in this tribe.
Yeah.
So the crawling is then ready to leave you. So kind of in arms until they crawl, basically. And I mean, you know, that's not always, you know, practical for us, but it just put me in that kind of mindset. And then when we brought Ed home, I can remember this so vividly. I was like, well, we're obviously co-sleeping, but I had no idea how to do it. So I remember we gave him like this massive portion of the bed with like a cot the other side. So there was a bit of, you know, like safe rollout space and stuff. And we just like lied him on that side of the mattress. And then me and Andy were literally on, you know, the total opposite side, like spooning, trying to get comfortable, but leaving him all this space because we didn't want to crush him, we didn't want to squash him. And of course, I think about night three, he was literally wedged under my boob, tucked in beside me, like under an armpit. And you realize how safe it all is, but you know, at first you're like so worried, aren't you? And
I know, it's just you're reminding me of one of my most satisfying postnatal jobs. And she had to have a planned cesarean. It was just as the COVID thing was beginning, funny enough. And she'd gone in and it was almost all kicking off. And I was going into hospital and going, it's really weird out there, you know. And she was like in her bubble, you know, her dream bubble. And she'd just taken me really seriously. When I said, literally, be like a mummy cat, she's the only person I've ever seen post cesarean really take me seriously, even in hospital, and being naked with other than a shawl. Had the baby just tucked under her arm in hospital, because most people have already still obeying the institutional feeling of everything, especially with a cesarean, because it's that feeling of being managed on postnatal ward. She had the most amazing recovery from surgery and breastfeeding attachment, as in it just went really well. And she said it was like life changing. And she just went through that feeding, sleeping, adjusting together with the child in the most logical, organic way she possibly could, i.e., I got her home, I was meeting her at home. And I said, well, why don't we just make the bed into more of like a platform? Think of the bed as a platform that you're going to be on for days and days and days. And
Like a little island.
like a little island. So I pushed the bed against the wall. I was giving them a plastic bag if I had a cesarean so they can swivel easily to get to the loo. Husband was lovely and just went to the spare room. And I said, just take up the center of that bed and go on your side and just stare at your baby and then draw them close to you when you need to feed and slightly bring them back when you don't. But basically, just get. And she had this wonderful, people don't think of it post cesarean, I don't think, as when it's obviously the most amazing thing to do because it's such a way to kind of create that bond and all this and helps healing and everything. But that was I can really picture, as you're saying that, there was that great big white expanse of sheet, but and then before, within 2 days I'd gone back and she was already really snug against her and she was so happy. And that's the thing, is it's such a happy way to start it. It's such an obvious, and it's amazing how I go around to people's houses when they're still pregnant, and I'm amazed that there's not even it'll be the side liar, okay, fine, might be what they want, or there'll be the snug me thing, pod thing, But actually, nobody's really ever said, how big is your bed? Now, bottom line is, it should be an absolute, let's just make this loud and proud on here now. Anyone having a baby needs to go into their own bedroom, look at the bed, and really think practically. Because even if you end up using your cot or your side liar, all that, they are going to 100%. I can think we can say 100%, can't we? There are going to be times when that baby's coming in with you. And if, as I often see, people have got a tiny little bed, like a standard king, not a standard, king size, isn't it? Not even super king, not forget embryo. I mean, I personally think it's just worth going whole hog and either just laying a massive mattress on the floor or just go, there are cheap ways of getting emperor size because they're going to be children in there forever. So why not just get rid of that silly little when you were 20 something going out? I don't know that you, it all makes sense when you're a couple because it's cozy, cozy and spooning up together and sex and that's it. No, this is now base camp.
Totally.
This isn't just cuddle land. It's like this is the baby's, as you say, nighttime parenting. It's like a whole land you're going to create in there. So you almost need 3 layers of pillows. And I mean, we'll talk about Safeco sleeping in a minute, but. First thing to do when you're having a baby is go and look at your bedroom. And even if you have invested in a side cot, and then people go, oh, yeah, but that's a bit of an outlay, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to a family last autumn and they'd cleverly turned their tiny bed sideways, which is an instant way of getting an emperor, and then simply put boxes at the end and then put cushions on the boxes from the sofa and it's really clever and they just made themselves a whole third extra without buying it. So if anybody's thinking I can't afford a bed, there's not really any reason. Second excuse people have is, oh well, it'll change all the bedroom. I mean, how many shits do you would you give after three children about what your bedroom looks like? Like you're still worrying whether you've got a bedside table. Are you actually kidding me? Like, just let the bed take over. But you can see, but oh no, we don't want to really change that because that's the arrangement of our bedroom. It's like, no, forget it. As Janet Velasquez said, the founder of the active birth movement, who had five, six kids, five children, which she just had them all sprawled out on the floor in one massive room. She just had mattresses all over the floor. And she said, sleep is a technical issue. Get it where you can. Get it how you can. Just basically bed down together like puppies and.
When after Jude was born, Mabel just decided she was coming back in with me for a while. I mean, we've always slept together and, on and off. I mean, I don't think, I'm always with her, basically. But
Oh, it's
she's
so
been
lovely.
properly in her bed for maybe a year or two, but before that we were always together and I still often fall asleep with her and stuff. And I love it. I mean, I don't think people talk about that enough either. The light beauty.
Yes.
But
It's
when,
my happiest memories, actually.
And some of, and the feeding, the night feeding, it's really, I mean, obviously not on your 10th feed, you're a bit fed up, but some of it is so quiet and precious and beautiful. And you take a moment, don't you? Sometimes I know you're not doing that every feed. I get that. People who are listening probably rolling their eyes. But sometimes you just, you get a little hand finding you in the dark or,
I
those. I don't know, when it's quiet and there's no pressure. I mean, lots of
know.
mums say their babies feed so well at night because obviously they're calmer, they're less stressed at night. There's just people who are having like issues with feeding and latch issues. Often they find their babies will latch well at night.
And can we also say from a health perspective, given that there's so much, I'm going to say the word propaganda from state, about not sleeping with your baby, it's I was reading this thing earlier about an essay about gaslighting in the Brownstone. If anybody wants to look at this, it's a really interesting, real exploration of gaslighting that happens so often in our culture about so many different aspects that you, there's the plain facts of a matter. And then somebody says, no, that isn't true. This is true. And it's clear as day with your senses that it's not what the case, but everybody goes on and believes that. An example would be, so when they discovered, like, we don't want people sleeping with their baby because it's dangerous, two things they did, which were literally bonkers and gaslighty and complete reverse, was they didn't say the health benefits. So you basically tell everyone the dangers, which are purported dangers, which are very hard to validate anyway, but not mentioning that a baby close to you has their breathing regulated. So forget about this idea of what they when they deliberately muddled up SIDS, like sudden infant death, as if that was to do with co-sleeping, where actually they're two completely different concepts. Mechanical suffocation, which is what they're trying to worry about, is not SIDS. It's a completely different concept. And you'll have social workers and health workers coming around, even midwives, implying that still, that, oh no, you don't want to sleep with your baby because of SIDS. It's like, well, hang on, that's a completely different thing. That you, if you're going to talk about it properly, what you mean is rolling on your baby. That's not SIDS, right? So first, let's get that straight. And if we can then empower women to understand the rolling aspect, and then say to them, much like we do in birth when we're trying to de-fear birth, well, hang on, let's look at that. Rolling your baby, really? Okay, well, why don't we use some common sense so that you don't? And also, would you anyway? Because you certainly wouldn't roll on anything lumpy in the bed anyway. And secondly, you can do it safely. And on that note, let's cite James McKenna. Just go and get yourself safe co-sleeping. Let me get his name. I mean, he's just out there. He's got a whole sleep laboratory that he's been supporting this forever and just saying, do it safely. It doesn't take, it's not rocket science. It's just
I
like,
think that's an important thing, though, isn't it? I think it's really important with anything like this that we'd, always saying, I know we feel we have to say it because we don't want to, like, we want to be covered almost, you know what I mean? But also, if you're a, responsible, loving mother, you make your own choices. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't co-sleep. The things I've done in co-sleeping would not be considered always safe, by the book. Things like, all my babies for the first 6 weeks slept on my chest. That's where they slept for the first 6 weeks. Even Jude did that with, his low tone. He still slept on my chest for 6 weeks. And I wouldn't have had it any other way. And people will listen to that and think, well, how? And I'm like, because I propped in a certain way. I had different pillows. I made a special like area. It was totally safe. He wasn't going anywhere. He couldn't roll into himself. He couldn't roll into, and I made that those decisions myself, as an instinctive
It's
mother.
how is that bypassed? I mean, that's what's bonkers. It's like, what mother wouldn't think it through if given half a chance? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but you know what to say to what you're just saying? I mean, I'm literally, it just makes me sigh heavily because I didn't do that with my first, and I will never get that time back. And it's one of my, I don't have many regrets in my life, actually. I Sometimes one thinks about that when you get old. You think, oh, could I have done things differently here? I would say that is one of my only regrets in my whole life that I didn't do what you did. And I don't know why I didn't. I don't know why I was disconnected. It wasn't somebody coming and telling me. I suppose it was cultural, but it was like my body was aching to do that. And yet I just didn't, I
But
don't
there's so much belief that it is wrong, isn't there, really? The overarching thing is in a cot, on their back, no covers, no sheet. I mean, have you seen cots these days? They are completely and utterly empty, bare, cold. I look at cots and I'm like, there's nothing in it. There's a sheet on the mattress. There's
And
nothing.
is that
There's not
why? Is
a
that
tent there.
why?
There's
There were no
not.
blankets in there because they're not.
Yeah, because it's like everyone's so scared. And I totally understand it. But like again with Jude, like he slept, in a sleepy head, in a cot, wrapped in my gran's shawl that she made him, cocooned up. He looked like a little vampire. He literally slept like swaddled like this in a sleepy head. It was, but he just, I don't know. I get worried about always talking about safety and referring people to outside sources because I think
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right.
if you connect with yourself and really think about, does
Yes.
this feel safe to me in this moment?
I
Because
love that.
a mum will know. And some women will never do it and won't want to. And that is okay because it's about you and the baby in relationship. Some mums will never sleep in a co-sleeping situation. I've met lots of mums who it's not for them, for completely, everyone's different, complex personalities, histories, whatever. That wouldn't work. And I think that's totally okay because they're listening to their needs and how they are going to, live their life with their baby. And that's in relationship. And it's the same with close sleeping if you choose to do it. Feel into what feels safe,
Oh, I love that.
because.
You're right. It doesn't matter. I don't need to refer because you're right. I always, I suppose, I don't know, which is that. It's like, oh, we better direct them to the safe guidance. It's like,
But I feel like that's us as doulas, right? And that's the right thing to do. But maybe because we're here, we're allowed to talk as mothers. We don't have to always, like as doulas, we would always refer to, a source, because then it's like empowering them to then do their own research and think about it and everything. Speaking freely as a mother here and just saying, just
trust yourself. And you know
trust yourself.
what, and it's so funny because I remember when the set third one, I think I can remember sort of being tickled by my own, let's break this down. So you've got your first or second night in a bed with a baby, which you're now just assuming you're going to sleep with when it's your second, third, fourth, whatever, if you're in that vein. And of course you don't even think about having a side light on. And I was remember thinking, how was I proposing to find his mouth and my nipple? And then I realized that you so use your common sense when you're experienced that you just smuzzle around, don't you? And you sort of, you kind of do this. And nobody can hear because they can only hear us speaking. But I remember I would like pat his little face, like, because he doesn't, when they're literally 2 days old. I was so determined not to be disturbed by a horrible little sidelight that I would rather blindly. That's how safe I felt. That I knew that I could just grope around his face and just draw him to my nipple, then shape the nipple with two fingers and sort of shove it in. And how did I know how to do that? How does anyone know how to do that? Because he just. Common sense. It's like feel into it. As you say, feel your body, feel their body. Make them match, and so you get good feeding because you can really attune. You here's the other thing is nobody talks about is that you're so nervous if it's a first time mum that oh my God, how are they ever going to breathe on their own? That whole thing of not having to watch over her all the time because she was so close to me that I could trust her.
Oh yeah, that's so important to say because that was such a an anxiety soother,
You're
having
so
them close to me.
viscerally on edge, aren't you? You're so hyper on edge. You cannot believe that this beautiful little perfect human is going to carry on managing on their own. And that probably takes about a week, doesn't it, before you actually finally get it. So that 7 days, I can remember I just used to stare at her all the time. And that causes nighttime disruption because you're just really, are they all right? And you're so alive to that vigilance. You're like really vigilant. Is my baby all right? Is my baby all right? Is my baby all right? It's the most natural thing is just to hear them breathing, you know, next to you. I mean, it's madness, isn't it? Not to have.
And it's our carbon dioxide, isn't it? As we breathe out, our carbon dioxide can kick in their breathing again. So if there is any dips or anything, which can be natural, I think, sometimes, can't it? That can
Apnea, yeah,
happen.
baby apnea, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and again, they don't talk about that, but if your baby's sleeping on your chest and you're breathing all over them, they're all
Yeah,
good, right? In
exactly.
theory.
Do you know what we should, because there are, you know, obviously going to be people listening to this, that, and we don't mind, you know, if, you know, like you said, I love the point you've made, which is we're talking with our mother hats on, and we do completely acknowledge that everybody does it differently. And I'm going to continue to be trying to break free of this funny world we're in at the moment that fears judgment and fears we're offending and fears. I just think we have to all state our own truth. So that's what we both feel. But on a note of, I was just thinking about what you were talking about, toddler wakings. I will just throw in one controversial thing to see what you think to this. So sometimes I get not controversial, but controversial between us, like to change the tune a bit. So I'll sometimes get called up by people going, I'm going mad. Right. So let's allow for that, because I'd like to hear what your thoughts on this. I am going mad. I cannot keep going. And I would say on that note that it's not that one self-martyrs and just does this forever because it, like all the things we're talking about here, that it's for the baby, it's for the baby, it's for the baby. I believe fully that if you apply common sense and you are in deep, attuned relationship with your child and yourself, you will also know when your time is, you're like, I'm done. And that is a really natural thing that happens, and that you don't have to feel guilty about that. It'll just feel like, actually, I really need this to change. And when you have that feeling, it's very confident. It's not a book telling you, it's not guidance, it's not a bossy social worker, it's not a mother-in-law. It's, this is for me now, needs to move on. It might be a new pregnancy's coming, or it might be various things can happen. So just to say, in case people are feeling, oh, I know I should be feeling that, but actually I'm really sick of co-sleeping, for example. The thing I always say is never try to change the arrangement out of I should be, or we need to move on now, because it never works. It never works. It only works when you finally, and you'll know it within yourself, and I did. When I got to Walter, he was a different sort of co-sleeper, so he was quite a thrasher arounder, and I did feel a bit, probably his third child, I was a bit like, oh, I think I might be, I need separate. But I didn't have to make, it wasn't a decision. It was the same common sense that I'd been using from that first day when I found his little face. You know, I just like felt ready, and I was behind that decision. I was confident in him being able to move in. And guess what he did? I just put him in with the girls. I didn't even give him a separate space. I just threw him in the bed with the other two. They were in their own little double bed by now, 5 and 3. And I just, they all slept together like puppies in this little double bed. And I would obviously sleep in there as well, like sometimes till 1 or something, and then go back to my bed. But the point is that, just to say for those, for anybody listening that's a bit like, when is enough enough or something like that, first of all, just trust yourself. And one other aspect to that is, if a child is, you aren't done and you're happy for them to be there, but they are turning over and turning over in the way you're saying, I think I wish I had come into the full confidence of my mothering presence was enough just to lay a heavy hand, keep my eyes closed. This is, I know this doesn't suit you, but this is just something because you're happy to respond. But I'm just thinking about mothers that might go, I just can't open my eyes again. You know that feeling? It's just to reassure that if a child does turn and sort of sit up and be upright and toddler, this is toddler wakings, and go, mum, 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 mum. I used to sometimes just pretend to be asleep, trusting with a heavy hand. I'd move my hand and a tiny shush or something like that. I wasn't feeding by now, probably, you know. And I think that's also something to get behind, which is, you are love. You love them. They just want to be reminded that you love them. They know you love them because you're next to them. And just,
Totally, and I'm not actually that fine anymore. I know that my mother's instinct is kicking in, and I'm really reaching my limit, like big time. And I'm starting to make little adjustments because we're still feeding as well. So that has its own, set of kind of other rules.
Yeah, I
And
know.
I'm starting to think about weaning and stuff. So I'm trying things at the
And it's
moment.
a process, isn't it? And there is
A
no
massive process.
moment. I mean, that's the thing as well. Everybody thinks it's got to happen. I mean, it takes ages to arrive at that real readiness.
I can also speak from an experience with my first when I did hit my wall. I completely hit my wall. He was about 14 months, and we were feeding and co-sleeping, and I needed some sleep. I mean, I've spoke about this before, but I had really bad anxiety like that first like 18 months, so that was playing a huge part as well. And obviously, anxiety is exacerbated by lack of sleep. Like for me anyway, definitely. And my anxiety has been quite high lately. So again, that's something else. But and I just hit a wall. And I think when you get to that point where you hit a wall almost suddenly, you want a sudden result. And I think that's why lots of people do things like crying out because they need it and they need it now. And it's not, they can't wait. And again, it's hard to tune into that earlier, maybe because of everything that's going on in life. All we did was, I think Andy had him for 3 nights or something, and it was a bit brutal and it wasn't great. And I knew he was okay because he was in arms, he was in
That's
love
what I did,
arms.
Jenna. That's what I want to say is I still think that no one talks about that. They go straight to sleep training. But actually, I remember Danny saying, but I am the same parent who loves her as well. I think I did do that with Constance. I think that's what we did as well. And similar time, like 15 months something. And he just said that, but I'm here too. I'm here loving her too. And so I don't think even if she was kicking up a crazy fight, it's not the same as an 8-week-old who doesn't know where the hell everybody is. She was just angry because the habit was being slightly
And
broken.
that was, yeah, totally. He was angry. Because I knew him, I could hear that. Do you know what I mean? So even though I didn't like it and it was hard, I knew he wasn't distress crying, if you know what I mean. It was like a really deep frustration, like, where's mum? Where's my boob? This sucks. But it wasn't like I'm in absolute bits, like, because he was being held, loved, shushed, kissed,
Yeah,
rocked, soothed
absolutely.
with, his dad. But even though we did that, he then did, it did work. He slept through for like 3 weeks straight, which I was just like, oh my God, my whole life has changed. And I got 3 weeks worth of sleep, and then it all started again. And he woke up, and I think he got ill, and he was teething really badly or something, and he was really, really upset one night. And I just fed him because that's what felt right. And then we kind of got into a pattern again, but it wasn't as full on. And I'd had 3 weeks of sleep, so I felt like a different person.
I did the same actually. I think I did the same because I think then, because it backtracked when we had the second child, and so it was the same. She came back in, and we started. And that's the thing is, you go backwards, forwards,
And
get.
I think as well, it's okay to go back. I think people sometimes, we're so scared to give in. You hear so many people saying, I don't want to give in, I don't want to give in. And I think sometimes that's exactly what you both need. Like,
Yeah.
if especially even if you start something and you think, oh, this feels awful, you don't have to see it through. If it's feeling just wrong, if you've tried crying it out and you're like, this doesn't feel right, stop.
Yes. And
Stop.
also, isn't it weird this phrase, which I mean, I'm not a sleep person, I'm not a pediatrician or that. So I'm sure it's actually true, this concept of sleep regression. But I resent the word regression because isn't it that as the child's developing, by certain ages, is it 8 months is a regression? Yeah. If you have, locked it down in the first 7 months and people just love that going through the night thing, and then they go back. Is that really a regression, or isn't it that their stimulation has now gone up? I don't know, it must be just where they're at, is what I mean. But I kind of don't even like that word regression, as if they've backpedaled. Have they backpedaled, or have they just reached a new level of existence that they now need you again? Do you know what I mean? So it's not really regression, is it? It's like It's as if the sleep is what a sleep regression concept implies to me is that there is a right way that sleep is done, and then we all have to fit around that.
And we always have to get sleep, right? We always have to be sleeping. Like, no one ever says it's absolutely okay if from say 0 to 5, you know, your kids wake up a fair amount. Just expect, if everyone just knew 0 to 5, kids wake up quite a lot,
Yeah.
everyone would probably be in a much happier place.
Exactly. And that's a line in Naomi Stadling, because she says that when she interviewed women and she stripped out expectation of what her baby ex was supposed to do, she said once that was stripped away and they just were doing what they were doing, about 90% of anxiety vanished in early mothering, because it was only about what the mother perceived the child should be doing that was causing the anxiety, you know. I mean, most of the time it's just what we think, and then we're a little bit annoyed with the child, we're annoyed with ourselves, we think we're failing, all those things, and they're just all constructs. It's all just made up. You know, if somebody just said exactly what you said, look, this is how it works. It's just all the old work stuff is disrupted, and exactly 5 years, realistically, 5 years, exactly. I
You're
mean,
right, though. Expectations has such, oh, I mean, I've always struggled with expectations anyway. Like, I've seen myself, I don't know, take that those away slowly, over, you know, through parenting for the last, I don't know, 12 years. I can remember how those nights affected me with Ed and how they affect me with Jude. It's so different, the person I am in my brain. You know, maybe this is unusual and maybe it's because it's Jude or my third, I don't know. I did get cross the other night, actually, because I think I'm at my peak. But I don't think until that, like till very recently, I've ever got frustrated. I've just gone into the cot, picked him up, and fed, you know, like, but I can remember with Ed, I used to feel cross. I used to feel frustrated. I used to feel on edge. I was like, not again, not again, not again. And I couldn't kind of, it was like I was wrestling with, he's supposed to be asleep. And
Mostly. And what's right, and I'll tell you how we can prove this is to do with expectation. I'm going to put this out there as a little tip slash reminder. So I think everybody would assume the first 6 weeks of their newborn life, first time particularly, was going to be a state of upheaval. So everybody probably does assume that. And yet there's this kind of, as you say, there's this, maybe for a lot of people in the middle of the night, the darkness, the wilderness hours, that feeling of the dawn is approaching and you feel absolutely done in. Well, here's the thing. Given you're a newborn life, and given there isn't a single place you need to be the next day, and given it's completely acceptable to loll in bed all day like a lazy teenager, I don't understand why I didn't used to say to myself, oh, well, we can sleep tomorrow. Because that's the bit would have probably freed me up from the panic of losing the night. Because, and actually, eventually, that is what happened. I started sleeping until 11, and I would kind of, because she did used to sleep 9 to 11, and I was recover. But also, you've got the nap in the afternoon, which is much more easily done if you just pull over a blanket. And there's interestingly, I find that new babies, I think it's because we aren't all tense in the afternoon and going, how's tonight going to be? How's tonight going to be? And then they pick up on it. I think if you just incidentally lay in your bed, pull over a blanket, have a little bit of piping radio and a cup of tea, and then you just sort of doze off, they go to sleep for 3 hours really easily. You know, why, you know, so how come then? So I wonder if, as you say, if we had just had a realistic expectation and then a couple of tips like that, it's like, if you're in the deepest, darkest, disruptive night of, you know, it's awful, and you're feeling that kind of, what would you call it? Like, you know, despondent.
It can be really lonely if you are not in an accepting place of it. Because I remember I could feel really lonely, especially when my husband was sleeping next to me, and I was up and up and up and up and feeding the baby and kind of annoyed about it and felt lonely. I know that sounds weird, but I did
So true,
through
so
the like
true.
dark of the night and like, oh, everyone else is sleeping and I'm up. And again, that was, I was just in such a different mindset, such to where I am now with it. The mindset plays a huge part, I think. Like you say, you know, that kind of aggy afternoon, if you can relax into it. But like you say, napping, you know, who naps these days with their baby? Who actually just like just gives in and lies in bed with their baby? I mean, People don't. I mean,
No.
I had a nap today with Jude. I literally was like nodding head. He was like feeding on me because he always does half his nap in the buggy, by the way. I've never had kids who sleep in cots in the day. So hats off if people have kids who sleep in cots in the day. So he does like half his nap in the buggy and then half on me. And I just thought, oh, I'm just closing my eyes. And then I was like
Yeah.
doing the whole nodding. And I just, and you need it. And it was lovely. 20 minutes. Oh, totally, like such a boost.
Micro nap. You know where we should probably end? I just suddenly thought, actually, isn't it crazy that we don't, everyone tell me a good birth story. Well, not tell me your sleep story. So, like, I was thinking, like, why, in a way, I bet you not many parents to be sit down with friends or sisters, probably because it's such a contentious issue. People and hot potato, people don't probably want to raise it because they don't know how they're going to feel or whatever. They think it's prying or, but actually, you should just take a couple of friends and just say, okay, cards on the table. How does it work for you? Let's be completely unemotional, unjudgmental. Just tell me what your experience was. And then three or four people, mash it all up together. And just see the common denominators, like we've just done. And just, it doesn't mean you then have a plan. You won't have a plan, but at least see that nobody has a plan. I mean, like, probably even the most hardened, Mary Poppins world will still have had some chaos. Do you know what I mean? So it's, and I think it can be a real, it goes back to what we always say, like, share it, just share it without adding in this loaded, baggage ridden, like, what happens is nobody thinks about it at all, and then it's just fraught, isn't it? And then, of course, into that fraught space come all the books and all the guidance. But actually, it should be that common sense, peer experience and peer support leads us to the place, and then you do you once they're there, and you just work it out based on the fact that it's all a bit of a mishmash,
That's so important, the you do you, because it is really individual. And some people are not going to want to co-sleep, and some people are, and some people are going to want to breastfeed, and some people aren't. And but just all I think we're trying to, we've talked about so many different things in this hour. I can't even believe all the different parts of sleep. I feel like we've just scratched the surface. You say one word, let's talk about sleep, and it's just like, poof. But yeah, I think it's just if you are listening to this and you are in a difficult place, just know there are lots of little steps maybe that could be taken before, a big, giant, sudden step. There are little things you can do, even if it's just if you've got a partner at home, just they take half the night, or you do something to grab some extra sleep, or you start letting yourself nap. Like just give in and.
And then I'll say the other tip, it does all eventually work out. You're living proof because you're first two. And the other thing to say is, if anybody's frightened by the old creating a rod for your own back, is that still circulating, that nonsense?
Yeah,
My
I
dad
think
was
so.
like, oh, they're going to be so dependent, they're never going to be able to sleep without you. Absolutely. I have three really good independent sleepers. Okay, I'm going to go as far as saying grounded, reasonably unanxious people. And I do think responsive sleeping has helped a bit. Put it this way, it's helped them as people. I'm sure there are babies that just don't need that, but mine needed it. And I'm glad that I, in the nick of time, realized there was something that was working for us, maybe even me as a mother, because I couldn't always override my quite cerebral, busy bee stuff in the day. I'm quite a rushy mum. I think it was where they pin me down, and they get to absolutely inhale me, so I think it wasn't so much they needed me, but I needed it, and that's how they mainlined me, and so and I can see that they're very, I just feel it. It was very grounding for them to be in bed with me and sleep with me. Not only was it some of the most beautiful memories of my mothering spirit, my early mothering experience, as I say, there is hope. I just eventually, about five, it's all sorted.
And I think you, like personally, I don't regret any of it, and I'm not going to regret like meeting their needs and loving them. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's just love, isn't it, really, at the end of the day? And I think, like you said, you were sad about not having Constance as close as you wanted her for those first few weeks. And I was sad when I was sudden with Ed, but I don't regret all the nights. I'm feeling it, but I don't regret it. But yeah.
We really are two ends of it, aren't we? Anyway, lovely speaking to you, as
Oh,
always.
you too. Thanks
And
so much.
we'll be back again soon with some. We're going to keep on the roll, actually, aren't we? We're going to
Yeah,
the ones. But
definitely.
nice to talk about this subject.
Yes.
Bye
And I
bye.
can't believe how big it is, actually. We'll have to do
Going to
another
go to bed now.
one. Yeah. And maybe get an hour or two. thank you.